Greetings, and welcome to the Optional Extra two-player podcast, episode 17, in which we break down this week's gaming news as well as what we've been playing. I'm Russell, and I'm hosting, and joining me, as always, is Mitchell.
Hello!
Greetings, Mitchell. As usual, we go straight into what we've been playing this week. Let's start with you, Mitch. So, you played and completed a game this week.
I've been playing A Hat in Time. I spoke about it, I think it was a few weeks ago, last week, perhaps?
I think one or two, yeah.
Yeah, but I've since completed the game, which is because I spent all day yesterday playing it and enjoying the hell of it. Right. Blah, 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 enjoying the hell out of it.
So when you play initially, I think you'd just done like the very first area.
I'd done like the first mission. I'd played like 20 minutes and had hardly done anything. Now I've seen everywhere and done most of the things.
I've seen a lot of people saying it's very much like Mario Sunshine. Would you agree with that comment?
It's very Mario inspired, and it does have some sunshine in it from a lot of things like... there's like these hidden levels, which are like the secret of something like in Sunshine, where they're like proper platforming. You don't have any of your abilities. It's just do this with what you have or what the normal platforming would be. They're all the same theme, which I found a bit annoying. They're all like... they're all white. White and icy.
That's an inherent problem with like platformer stuff though. It's like, it's always like, here's this world, this world. It's like, it's the same thing all the time.
Yeah, but this one was, in that mode, it was all white. And then in the main game, you have, I think it's four areas, and the final area. So you've got Mafia Town, which I think is probably the weakest area, because it's like...
is that the first one?
Yeah, it's the first one. It's like a kind of seaside town surrounding kind of a volcano, but it's a bit... like, there's too much going on, and it doesn't all feel like it's really connected properly. So it's a bit disjointed.
Right, I'm just thinking, it's a mafia town surrounded by a volcano. Like, it's
the volcano's in the middle, and it's holding up like a Italian mafia restaurant at the top.
It sounds pretty cool to me. Like, that's definitely...
it is pretty cool.
Idea.
But when you're walking around the town, it's like there's a bit of construction going on. There's a couple of boats. It feels like... later on, the game gets so much better. Like, all the different levels.
So you think the focus... It's just all over the place in that first bit.
Initially, but this game has so many good ideas in different levels, but it never really stays with them. So, on the second level, you're in a movie, like, theater. Well, not in a movie theater, you're in a movie studio. So, the first level, you're in the studio. The second level, you're on a train, and you're trying to solve a murder.
In that area.
In that area, yeah. It's like a separate part of it. It's like three levels in one. So, you've got that, and you've got some... big open, like, little town area with smaller objectives than the mafia town. But it was like, you're just on this train solving a crime all of a sudden. It's like, I mean, platforming was inherent. You had to find these, like, had to find evidence, and then you had to try and... then you got to pick who you thought was the criminal.
So does it become, like, Ace Attorney, where you got, like, the objection and stuff going on? Or is it
it's just very simple. It's, like, at the end, you have to platform to find all the things, so you can make anyone... you can say anyone's going to be the one who's murdered this person.
Okay. So you still do get to make a choice, but it doesn't matter that much.
It doesn't really matter. And the whole... and then the other one you've got, you have to kind of be a star, so you have to kind of... it reminded me of, like, Tony Hawk, so you had to get points for doing stuff, and you had to just...
oh, okay.
Do something cool in front of a camera. Like, I often just leaped in front of them because that got me more points. Or you had to walk up to people and they all start laughing and they're like, oh, she's famous. And that's that
makes
level
sense, yeah.
And then, yeah, so the third level is in a spooky forest, which you get captured by some demon guy who wants you to do his bidding and do what he says. So you end up...
deal with the devil.
Yeah, and the best level in that one was a haunted house, where there was this ghost who haunted the place, and it felt like maybe Alien Isolation, where this thing just chases after you, have to hide somewhere, and after doing certain objectives in the house, like finding a key, certain things would break, so you had to go, okay, where do I hide now, with this really haunting music just out there.
So it's like, the game's really like, it's like a playground with all these different ideas in it,
and then
they just kind of like...
but the fourth area is... definitely my favorite, and makes me sad that it was only in one level, because you basically... it says free roam when you pick it. You climb up this mountain, you do a few things, then you get this thing opens, like this little like thing you can hook onto, and you just go up into the clouds. It's like such an impressive sight. And then you go to this big open region where there's like four main objectives, And it's all open, because the other ones, when you get the timepiece, which is your star, you go back to the main thing. But this one felt more like, you got that, then you can do this other objective. Which were all these really impressive platforming, like, distinct areas. And they all had their own little titles. So to me, it looked like maybe this was the initial idea for the whole game. And then they realized, yeah, and you got these rails to grind between them. And it was just really impressive. And I wish the whole game was like that. And I don't know whether that was the intention, because it felt like the most well-developed area to me.
It might have been one of those... It seems like it's a game with heaps of different ideas, and they're just trying to implement all of them. So it's just possible that that idea is better executed than the other ones.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, one of the things that I was going to say that I haven't really talked about is literally the title fact that it's called A Hat in Time because you are switching hats.
You're switching
hats.
Are
there heaps of hats in the games?
It's eight hats.
Okay, so I was going to say, when you mentioned the murderer one, do you whack on like a Sherlock Holmes
hat? You literally get a Sherlock Holmes hat. And you do a parade thing, get a parade hat. And yeah, there's a few hats. You get a hat that makes sprint. You get a hat that turns you into an ice cube. You've got a hat that slows down time.
What's funny, because Mario does have that hat mechanic, obviously.
Yeah, it's like coming out next week, and it's got all the hat mechanics.
Even when I hear a bit more about this game, it reminds me more of Majora's Mask, a Zelda game. Because the hats are masks,
effectively.
Yeah, because the mask gave you different abilities. Like, when you mention one makes you faster.
Yeah, one gives you the ability to sprint.
Yeah, in that game, it's not even a mask, it is a hat. It's bunny ears, so it's more just like a hat in that one.
That's where the bunny ears come from.
Yeah.
In Smash Bros. But yeah, the final level is Bowser's Castle. Who would have thought?
You mean Bowser Castle equivalent? So
yeah, pretty much. No, it's not Bowser rocks up and goes, "We made a deal with Nintendo."
Oh, that would be so cool, though.
That would be like amazing.
Flat up shows up.
Shovel Knight didn't appear, which upset me. He appears in everything.
He has shown a lot recently. I guess this Hat in Time, I think, has been developed for quite a long time.
Yeah, it's been. It was kickstarted in the second while.
Because Ukulele beat him to it. Like, when Ukulele got announced, it came out before Hat in Time had already started before then.
Yeah, and I'd say, I haven't even talked about the platforming mechanics, which are, like, you normally play one of these 3D platformers that aren't a Nintendo one, and you go, okay, this does not play as well as Mario, but this one, while not playing quite as good as Mario does, played really fluently and was really quite... Like, you never felt as though the gameplay was... Like, how you played it was making it hard to do things, because it felt... Right. I think there was some kind of assist in it where it'll help you do certain things. Because you know how when you jump, like, say, in Crash Bandicoot, you're looking at your shadow to see where that is?
Yep.
Yeah. So this one, I think, assisted you in that. Yeah, it's got a double jump, it's got a, like, in Sunshine you kind of do this leap forward and skid across the ground. This one did that.
No, not the Yahoo one. Yahoo!
Yahoo! No, she doesn't, yeah, the game's also kind of funny, it has a dark sense of humor that Mario would never have, because it's just, like, indie game. It's, like, I really enjoyed the game, it's a really good game, really fun.
Do you think this game... I mean, it's come out before Odyssey, but do you think Odyssey is inherently going to take away interest from this game? Or has?
Well, Hat in Time came out before, but Mario is going to dominate everything, everywhere. And I don't think a Hat in Time has the chance to survive it, because Mario's just so much bigger. It probably should have... Like, it is in a dangerous spot, because if you release it after Mario Odyssey... People are comparing it to Mario Odyssey.
You're directly compared.
If you release it before, you're in with a better chance, because, I mean, people are hyped for Odyssey. Like, where they might want a platformer to tie them over. So releasing before was probably the advantage. Such as me. That's why I wanted it.
I think it would have been slightly better if they released it a bit earlier, but, I mean, development time is what it is. If they released it, I'm sure, the earliest they possibly could.
Yeah, and they're like, they probably knew, don't release it near Odyssey. That is a death sentence for any 3D platformer.
Yeah. Basically, if you release your Odyssey, it's a bad idea, but it's like, well, we have to get it before. This is the best we can do. If you release it after, it's going to be a bad thing, unless we release it way after. And then it's bad for us, because we need money. Like,
we need money more than Nintendo needs money. But they did. Yeah, it's a really good game.
Which is good. It's really good. It's short overall, yeah?
Yeah, it took me about 7 hours to beat. But I was enjoying every minute of it, so it's... I mean, I haven't 100%ed it. So
that's what I say. So because it's a collectathon thing, is it? You got all these different items to
not
get.
Not heavily. It's not like Banjo-Kazooie collectathon. Okay. It's like a bit more than Mario is, but definitely less than Banjo is.
Okay, but there isn't. So there isn't 100 of this and.
Oh, there is, but you find them really easily. You do get these badges, which. Say, if there's something like the little pickups or these little green orbs, you can get one that auto picks it up if it's kind of near you. Bit like, you can get that ability.
Oh, upgrades,
and,
okay.
Yeah,
it's a magnet, essentially.
Yeah, it's like Ratchet and Clank. It just kind of flies at you. But yeah. You got a few
but
of those.
It is a limited commodity. There's a limited, though. It's not like Ratchet and Clank,
you know what?
Where there's just bolts everywhere.
I think it was unlimited because every time I went back to the areas, because they act as like a world, the green things are always there. Like, they always respawn. So, if you really wanted to collect everything, it wouldn't be hard.
Okay, what would the green orbs use?
They buy badges. They also buy... what else do they buy? They allow you to open levels as well. But they're not hard to find. I always had enough. I never felt like, no, I don't have enough. How am I going to do this? Because they're always very cheap. So, one level costs 30 to open. I'd find 30 no problem.
Okay, so interesting.
It made it easier to do it.
Does that mean... Does that mean you can do them in any order as long as you have enough of the green orbs or whatever?
You have to collect time pieces to unlock levels.
Okay, so you can't just move on.
No. You open levels with the stars and then you do the first mission, then you can open another mission with them. There's only like one per thing, whereas later on there's different ways to unlock it. And the Alpine region, which is the big open connected one. You didn't even need anything. You're just like, you're in there and just do it. So they kept, each level they kept trying something different, which was good and kept it interesting, which is important in a game that you're interested in.
It's good to have one a reasonable amount of time. So like, if this game was probably like 20 hours, maybe it like wore out its welcome. Because it sounds like it has really good ideas, and by being short, it can implement all those ideas.
Yeah, it reminded me, the big Alpine level reminded me of Titanfall 2, how one level had this, you... changed the timelines, and that was like my favorite level of any FPS.
Okay,
I was like, I wish this was the game. Whereas I wish that big open level where you connected with the big rail things was the game. But yeah, I would highly recommend it if you like platformers. It's available everywhere.
And it's out before the inevitable monster of a platformer coming out next week.
Oh yeah.
the king, as it were.
The king is returned.
All right. To give you a bit of break, I'll move on to the game I've been playing, which is the same game I was playing last week, but being a very long game and plenty of content. I was really only like maybe a third of the way through when I played it last week. I've got a lot more impressions on it.
It
on top of that,
does.
I do. I have a review. It's written. It's up on the website.
It's up on YouTube.
YouTube as well. So feel free to watch that for a more kind of like critical / discussion
more
in a format.
In depth.
Yeah, it's less all over the place like this discussion will be. It's more focused in bits. But it brings up some of the points that I want to talk about now, and that is, one, I'll get straight into it with the loot boxes, just because it's a hot topic. Obviously, everyone's talking about loot boxes at the moment with the various Battlefront. We talked about it last week.
We're talking about it every week now.
It seems that way. Like, the industry is just changing, and that's just kind of becoming a big focus. But it's one of those things where I really think it's probably the most pointless loot box system I've ever seen in a video game. It serves practically no purpose at all, because it's one of those things where the only person I could ever see wanting to purchase those loot boxes in Shadow of War is someone who wants to essentially win the game easier, or just like fast track and just go, I just want to beat the game and get over it with. But in my mind, I'm like, if that's your thought process, just quit the game.
Yeah,
just move on.
Don't play this game. If you have no time, play a mobile game then.
It doesn't make sense, because I understand when it comes multiplayer, because inherently you're always playing it and you want to be the best. So it's like, okay, you buy the
stuff.
No
one ever was.
Where Shadow of War, it doesn't make sense to me. I'm just like, who? If you're, because there is this bit at the end of the game. At the end of the game, there's this thing called the Shadow Wars, which at that point the game essentially completely changes its approach, and you have to orcs keep attacking your fortresses, and you have to defend them.
Damn orcs.
So, and they get progressively stronger and stronger and stronger until they become max level. In fact, they exceed max level at a certain point to become even stronger than what you can become.
Okay.
But really, because of that fact, and even if you're really good at Talon, as not to toot my own horn, but I like to think I'm reasonable at the game, Most of the time throughout when you're just playing the campaign, you can do almost everything just by yourself if you're good enough. You don't even need the Uruks to help you. Sometimes it's useful just capturing them just so they're not a force to have to take on later. So it's basically like you're just making the enemy army smaller as opposed to them actually helping you in a fight. But at the end game, you're getting attacked. They're attacking your fortresses, the different points. You have to defend them. And when you're attacking multiple war chiefs at once in different locations in your fortress, if one spot isn't protected and you're taking on some guy further down, they'll just capture that point very quickly. And then at that point, that gets broken, more orcs, another war chief comes in into your base. So then you have to take on even more enemies. So it gets harder. So if your Uruks aren't up to snuff, it can be quite challenging just because you can't really have your focus on every single Uruk at the same time. It's quite literally like impossible.
Multitask nightmare. I guess that mode with it ramping up really hard is meant to be like Sauron does win. He does capture all of Mordor.
It's one of those ones where when it starts, like, okay, you finish the main story, but there is a true ending to get the true ending, do this stuff. So I think it's ultimately Monolith going, look, we've been told we have to put loot boxes in, and this is the bit where we're going to, you know, say to our higher ups, look, this is when people might spend money at this point.
Yeah, it's like they didn't. I don't think the developer put them in. It's always the publisher.
I don't think the developer ever puts them in. It's just like, that's maybe not true because I can see like Blizzard with Hearthstone and like Overwatch.
Well, Blizzard did, but they're like involved in their game design and publishing.
That's true. And I'm like, their game design's inherently based around that, where I think it's a better, like they focus around that system. It's like, look, you can play the game without it and you just get costumes, or in Hearthstone's case, as we kind of discussed last week, it's basically just, you know, get new, it's cards. Like, that's just how cards have always been. It's always random. But in this, I found that, one, I did enjoy the defense missions, although they go on way too long. Like, like way too long. Like they definitely deliberately padded that section. Like, it's after the first, like, five or six, you start to go, this is kind of padding. And then once you exceeded 10, like, okay, this is getting
ridiculous. this is padding. It's very live.
This is too long, this final session. To get one final cutscene, which I didn't mind the final cutscene, but let's be honest, most people are just going to go on YouTube and watch it. Like, they're not going to do this section. And I don't necessarily blame them for it. Like, you can do the first couple and go, all right, move on.
All right, I've seen enough. Let's just watch it and get this over with. Because it sounds like a lot of effort just for, okay, I want to see what the true ending is, when I don't see it being very special.
Yeah, there's nothing. I liken it to the Arkham games because they did the exact same thing. Like in Arkham Knight, you had to get all the Riddler trophies to get that final ending. Which, for me, I like completing games. I like doing everything I can. So for Arkham, I enjoy doing all the Riddler trophies to get that final completion. It didn't bother me. But I can see how the people are like, I'm not going to collect 240 Riddler trophies to see this final ending. I'm just going to look it up.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
And this game's the same idea, except I think the Riddler trophies at least were more diverse and more enjoyable overall. With this, starts off good, then just becomes way too slow and monotonous. Like,
yeah, I've done this again and again and again and again. Just keep doing it.
Yeah, and I can see that this is where they want you to buy those loot boxes. Damn, so boxes. you can get those max level orcs. You don't have to either capture them or level up your current ones, which is what I did. I didn't even need to do it that often. That's the surprising thing. Like, most of the time, I was capturing Uruks during those fights. So when I'm defending, doing the defense missions, the Uruks that are attacking me, I can still dominate them and recruit them to my force. So most of the time, I'm just grabbing equally strong Uruks anyway and just replace them in the next defense mission. So the only thing I could think of most of the time was like, unless you're never like dominating anyone,
unless you don't play the point of the game.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's what it comes down to. It's like, unless you're literally not playing this game in the way games can be played differently. I'm not even saying like it's supposed to be played, but domination is a key part of how this game is supposed to be done. And if you never dominate any orcs, and all you're doing is just like Talion fight and stuff, I can see you like struggling this bit. But then if you're considering loot boxes, just don't do it. Just like, there's no point.
No, it's a waste of money.
Yeah, you're doing it for nothing. Because the only, other than this defense stuff, and that's honestly the only time you'd ever consider it. In the main game, 0 point. There is 0 point to do it. It's because there is an online component, but that online component is so like small in nature. Like, it's basically just you can do the fortress like capture modes again, so you can attack other people's fortresses.
Oh yeah,
and that inherently means obviously someone can attack your fortress, which means if you have the biggest, most strongest Uruk force, all legendaries or something, it's going to be way harder, one, to defeat them, and two, for someone else to defeat you, which means the leaderboard, ranked mode, you'll typically be the highest rank. But I don't know how many people will give a shit at all.
No one cares about that. I mean, some do, but...
Yeah, I mean, multiplayer is always like my... I almost don't care. And I did like that you could do the missions, and that's honestly what I felt they should have done, where make the final section way shorter, half it, essentially, and then just make the rest the online mode. Just go, yeah, you can just do the rest online. Whatever.
Yeah.
But instead, they patty the heck out of it with the hopes that some people are like, you know, I have to commit and win this game, we'll pay money.
Yeah, some people are going to, hopefully, they're going to break.
And that's the thing. I really expect most people won't, but it's that dodgy thing where it's like, I know inherently that they put the stuff in because there will be someone, and there definitely will be someone, who will go, oh, whatever, I'll just spend, you know, money to some people. Like, when you're working, you're making a lot of money, you're just like, oh, whatever, $50, I'll just drop it on this. And then, of course, like, you know, Warner Bros. Going, yes, yes.
Like the orc.
Yeah, exactly like the orc. And they're just building up these little money. Or they can have a huge whale and they go, they want to be the number one on the, you know, leaderboards. So they're paying $600 or something to get heaps of legendary orcs or whatever. But it's just inherently taking out of the enjoyment of the game. So I can't see any reason why anyone would do it. And in general, it's just a disappointing feature to implement. So other than the loot box stuff and the end defense missions, the side missions were something I don't believe I talked about at all last week.
I
was surprised, really, how important they felt like to the idea of the game as a whole. Like, most of the most iconic, like the ones they show on the trailers and stuff, are in the side missions, with the exception of the fortress, like, attacks and assaults and stuff.
That's interesting.
Most of the Nazgul stuff, where you have to attack and, basically, you're hunting down Nazgul, essentially, is what you're doing. That's side missions. Like, you basically, oh, Nazgul's going here, you hunt them down, and they have, like, this cool mission where they'll summon in, or, like, necromance different forces to life and that kind of thing.
That's cool.
The Balrog is a side mission. Yeah, you don't have to do it. You can just go, oh, captures the fortress, win the game, and the Balrog's just sitting there doing other stuff. And the Balrog is it's one of the most cinematic missions in the game.
I can imagine so, being a Balrog.
It's one that's probably the most, I'm like, really? They don't even put it in the main storyline, like, to do the Balrog stuff at all. Like, you know how sometimes they have, like, there's one mission that's, like, part of the main mission, and then they just bring the rest side content? Actually, when I think about it, I think they do, because you see Kanan, who's, like, this, I believe she's an Entwife, but I don't know if they ever call her that, but I think that's what
she is. I thought she was, but I didn't know. Yeah. Like, they've never said she is.
I don't believe they ever say it in the game either, so I'm like, she looks like an Entwife. I think that's the idea behind her, because the fact that she's incredibly powerful. Like, she's way more powerful than any Ent is. But I think that's the idea. It's like, there's so little of them, because she's, like, basically, like, a Gaia incarnate, so she's inherently got all these forces. One of the things...
Yeah.
The story, I don't know how many liberties it takes, where I'm like... I'm not well-versed enough in Tolkien lore to go, I'm like, is this in the appendices or the Silmarillion or something? I don't know.
Someone will know.
Because sometimes, like, even S.H.I.E.L.D., like, I remember, I don't remember which podcast we did it, but you mentioned that S.H.I.E.L.D., there was a spider who could take on human form. S.H.I.E.L.D.'s mother, is that right?
Yeah, she wasn't technically. She wasn't a spider, she was something else.
Okay. But I can see that's where the idea came from, to make S.H.I.E.L.D. Turn into a female form.
Yeah, they definitely took... it from what's been written, but they have taken a few liberties of how far to go with that.
Yeah, they definitely take liberties in the so there's definitely some stuff involving the Nazgul and Sauron that are very much like, you're definitely reaching to, like, it's connected up to them, because it is connected to the movie universe. It isn't like this is just Tolkien stuff in general. It's like, no, it's clearly connected to Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings specifically. Gollum's in, for example.
The designs.
Things have changed a little bit, but Sauron, it's just an eye. Like, it's just, they never physically describe his form. It's an eye in the books, where Peter Jackson gave him a physical form, and that's what they're inherently doing in this this game, building on that. But
because his armor's badass.
Yeah, it is a very cool looking armor. This game builds on that. And of course, the Balrog is the Moobrag. Although, I wasn't sure, and then I played the game. I'm pretty sure it's just a Balrog. It's not the Balrog from the movie.
There are more Balrogs.
Yeah, which, until this game, that's another thing on that Tolkien thing. I'm like, I'm not even sure if there's supposed to be more than one Balrog, but in this game, there's definitely more than one Balrog. It's not the same one. It's a different one.
Yeah, there's a few Balrogs. I think a couple Balrogs took out Shelob's mother, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. But yeah, the mission was cool. There were other ones that aren't as good, like the human missions. Just because I didn't think the humans' characters were particularly good. But
for Gondor,
their motivations were like the most simplistic storytelling you could possibly give. Where it's like they lose their homeland and like now they need to reclaim like some other like a patch or whatever. And then the daughters of the father and all this. It's like they've got inherently very basic plot lines, and they don't really grow as characters. Like basically start off at A and end at A.1. It's not much growth. Which is disappointing. But
Let's go back to Minas Tirith.
Go back to Minas Tirith, yeah. I do think Talion and Celebrimbor's story is, I don't know if compelling is the right word, but I did enjoy all their interactions. Especially when the first game, I think Talion was very one note. Like, he had almost no personality in the first one. He was literally just like a body for Celebrimbor to inhabit. With this one, especially Celebrimbor's character, like, particular, like, he's becoming more, like, aggressive and obsessed with power in this game. And Talon's more obsessed with protecting humans, so protecting the Gondorian people.
Gondor.
Split of ideals and ideas between them. But I did ultimately like how the story ended, even if it's like very much a grasping at straws for like Lord of the Rings lore. It's like this fits into the movies in this way. It's like okay, whatever.
Definitely fits. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah. I think that's what you have to do in this game. Is like if you're one of those people that consumes any content and go like, oh, this is Game of Thrones, or you're watching Game of Thrones and you go, this isn't what they did in the books, it's so much worse, I hate it. Like, you just have to go, this is a different thing, accept it as it is, it's still in the same universe, so you still feel a connection to it because of that, but don't worry too much about the nitty-gritty bits because they're changing them. It's different.
Yeah, it's a different thing, take it as that.
Yeah, and I don't know, from how this game concludes, where they'll go from this game. Like, I'm pretty sure it's sold very well. I don't see why it wouldn't have. I mean, loot boxes, I'm sure...
They're like 400,000 on Steam in the first, like, week.
Okay, yeah. I'm sure loot boxes hurt it in some way, but not enough. Like, it's gonna be Battlefront 2. Like, Battlefront 2, the loot boxes is going to hurt, I think, its endpoint. It's not going to hurt its start. It's going to sell ridiculously well, Battlefront
2. It's going to sell well, because you got Star Wars on the box. With this, you got the Middle Earth, pretty much got Lord of the Rings on the box.
Yeah, exactly, and it helps. And the first game was really good, and I do think this game... Everything good about the first game is in this game. Like, it doesn't take away anything that the first game did, and in fact just makes it better. But because you've done it before, you inherently go, well, I have done most of this already. So you go, well,
yeah.
They could have maybe done a bit more, especially, I think, in the character development. Like, I think they could have made more compelling side characters and built up better side sections overall, as opposed to really focusing on this new fortress mechanic. The drakes are awesome too, which... I didn't mention, like, how awesome it is. In the first games, you were just, like, either running around on the Karagors, which is cool just how fast they are, like, climbing up giant mountains
that. They were pretty cool.
All the Graugs, which are more just, like, a giant force of power. Where
pretty much
drakes,
a Rancor.
exactly, a Rancor, yeah. Where the Drakes, it is so cool, in Fortress missions in particular, to, like, let a Drake loose, and it just starts breathing fire down on, like, every Uruk in the Fortress. And then you're, like, stunning it so you can freaking... teleport up to it, and you're just flying around breathing down fire on everyone, destroying these Uruks. Like, some of them just get absolutely annihilated by fire, and some later ones are, like, invincible to it, so the dragon does nothing. And you can, like, fly down, and you can fly down and pick them up, so you can, to get health back. Like, it's literally just swoops down, pick an Uruk up, comes up and eats it in the air. And one of the things I loved doing the most, actually, was flying around as the Drake, killing all these Uruks, and then making one into, like, the dominate capture mode, and then jumping off the back, doing, like, a flip, and then mid-air going into, like, teleport mode, shadow teleport to him and capture that Uruk. It was so cool. And I loved doing it every time I did it.
Every time.
It never got old. Honestly, never did. Not once I go, oh, this is boring. Like, every time, like, man, I love doing this. It looks so cool, and it feels awesome. And that's like, the best credit I could give to the game, is that it's got problems, but it just feels awesome. It always just feels
cool. It's got Drake backflip dominations.
Yeah. Epic. It always feels epic. Even if it stumbles in other areas.
Not going to forget it, the game?
No.
Nothing will be forgotten.
Nothing will be forgotten, yeah. It will be remembered. But yeah, that's my 2 cents on it. For exact breakdown and stuff, check out the review. But as you can tell, I did enjoy it, if not with just a couple of mistakes here and there, stumbles.
Nothing's perfect.
Yeah, nothing's perfect. But moving on to your final game that you played, Mitch, where we go?
Total War Warhammer 2. I need to say it like that, otherwise I'm going to call it Total Warhammer 2.
Yeah, you need to make distinct gaps here.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, I'm going to say this wrong if I don't. I have completed the main campaign map.
Yeah, which
by
is...
by playing it wrong. Because the whole point was, there are these vortex. There's this vortex in the middle of Ulthuan, which is the elven-like islands. And everyone has to kind of channel a ritual to do something to it. So, like, the Skaven want to just release chaos and kill everyone. That's what the Dark Elves kind of are thinking as well. And the Lizard Men just want to do something with it. Elves want to contain it. And that is the main objective.
Right.
Unless you kill everyone and leave no one around to survive, and then you win by a dominate victory.
Because you killed everyone on the map.
I killed every major faction on the map through conquest, with, like, basically on normal difficulty. Eventually you get to a point where you can just have so many resources, and the AI aren't going to be as smart with it as you. You can just push it into armies and then balance it out. And, yeah, so on top of making alliances with the other elven factions who joined me, so I had multiple fronts all over the world, and I had multiple armies. So to start my conquest to capture the whole game, I start with the Dark Elves, because I'm High Elves, and they're my enemy. They have to die first. So I sent over a force of four separate armies, and little by little conquered every inch of ground they had, and turned them into nothing. I was playing the High Elves like a Dark Elf. Effectively, I just killed everyone. I was like, thinking the whole time, I'm playing this wrong.
Yeah, instead of like, as typically elves like keep to themselves and like protect what they own, you're like, now I'm conquering everything, baby.
Everything is mine.
Annihilating the lot, yeah.
So I conquered their capital, which was very rewarding. And then their whole region turned into my region, which in turn gave me more money.
So when you catch them, it becomes your force. It's all high elves. It doesn't, like, you can't suddenly use, like, Skavens or something.
Oh, no, they it all converts to your kind of thing. It depends if you use it, though. You can't, not everything's inhabitable as a high elf, because high elf, some of it's too chaotic or too hot. They, like, kind of the cool...
I was thinking, like, a Skaven's, like, freaking hole. It's like, oh, I've just got to put an elven force in here or something.
Well, you can do that, but sometimes it's not the best habitat for you. And there's separate levels of corruption. There is Skaven corruption, where they kind of just under your city going, making all kinds of noise. You've got vampire corruption.
So when you own that location, Skaven can still be there? Is that right?
Yeah, they'll be underneath, making all the little noises, making your people a bit more eerie. And if it gets to 100%, little Skaven pop up and take your thing back.
Like, that's cool, yeah.
Yes, we're back.
Your base is ours. but then once the Dark Elves are conquered, I moved on to the Lizard Men, who had a nice little island, which, not a little island, but part of a continent. So I attack them from the north and south, killing Skaven along the way, because their little faction was kind of all caught up in the midst of it.
Wait, so you literally pincered them from every angle?
I pincered them from every angle and killed them all.
Killed them all. Burned them all.
Every single one. All their land, all their base are belonged to me. then there was a couple of vampires on my new continent, so I had to fight them.
What race are they a part of? Or was it just general stuff on the map?
Oh, they're just their own. They're just vampires, little vampire settlement in the corner. You know, they burned down a building of mine, so I killed all of them. Just to...
Well, I mean, they burned down a building. I'm like, I'm not familiar with most vampires normally don't like fire, but inherently these ones do, it seems.
Well, they destroyed my city. However they raised it to the ground, I don't know. And I killed all of them, and then... There's one other continent, which is south of where I started, which is pretty much vampire land. It's all corrupt. It's all a desert. My people get injured for even walking in there. However, I was going to plan on conquering them, but I had allies with a little lizard men tribe down the corner. Except then they decided to start doing the ritual, which is how you win the game for them. So I'm like, okay, we were allies. Now I'm declaring war on you, sending my entire army over to kill you. And winning the game.
I do like how it is literally like a Game of Thrones where it's like, you go, oh, we're allies. And then they just go, well, we can just win here. So we'll just do that while you're off attacking something else.
So I sent over like four armies. I sent five up north because I was going to kill all the vampires. My end goal was to conquer the entire game, but I got a domination victory with killing the final lizard men. I was pretty keen with that. I also killed another group of my allies, the Wood Elves, just because they had a nice base and I needed a base of operations to invade the vampires. So I figured, I'll just kill them. I'll take everything they have and use it as a staging ground. Which I never got to invade the vampires.
Wait, because, when you say staging ground, you mean like an occupation point for you to hold?
I was just going to put all my armies there and just march them into the north, which is where they were all.
Take out
everything systematically. And then I was going to kill every remaining ally I had, so the world would be fully elven and in peace and harmony.
It's the elven way, where it's just like, essentially remove all other races. It's like, the elves are the best, so all the rest of the crap, let's get rid of all of them.
Get rid of them all. And my empire was making so much money, I had like over 20 armies around the map who could just, they could just stomp anyone who came across me, because I kill elf everybody.
Right. When you win the game, is there like fighting games when you normally win those arcade modes, it'll be like, here's a little cutscene with that race. Is that how this works?
There would be if I did the proper ending. I did the domination victory where I got domination victory popped up in words, and then it gave me a little timeline of what I did. And just watching the timeline of what I did with the daggers was like, this turn I conquered all this, this turn I conquered all that. And then it's just so cool watching it all just happen.
Is it one of those ones where they show you like your map point? So it's like, at this point, it feels like your conquest thing. Like, it just show a map? Or is it like a bar thing where it just goes...
It shows a bar and a map. So the map is showing you like how big your empire is growing.
Right, yeah, cool, yeah.
I was just watching the later, like the last 20 turns was... Well, last 50 turns was all conquest, 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 till I won. So yeah, it's
much better than a more recent, oh, not more recent, but recent WoW game. Well, not WoW game, sorry, Warhammer game with Dawn of War. Yeah,
yeah, both published by Sega. Creative Assembly somehow can make a better game than Relic can make an RTS. So that's just how it is.
How we do? Is that it? Is all we've done in that?
I'm planning on waiting for the Mortal Empires campaign.
Right. Yeah. Get Bob Capone on those forces and whatnot.
Yeah, I'm gonna dark elf that shit up.
I said no interest in doing it again with like another race, like Skaven.
I do want to give Skaven a go because I like their little abilities, because you can summon a group of them during battle. They'll just pop up out of a hole. I got more forces than I didn't expect.
I inherited liked how they like talk about the Skaven and shit. Like, oh yeah, they just hide in stealth barrels and stuff, so you can't see them on the map. Like, oh, that sounds like
you
a
know it's them though. You see, like, this looks suspiciously abandoned, and there's a lot of abandoned bases around here.
Because their occupation is always an abandoned base. Is that right?
It's always an abandoned base. You're always like,
yeah, I see what you mean. So when you see abandoned bases all the time, you go, well, this is awfully suspicious.
I wonder what's in here. Oh look, Skaven. Who would have thought? They're the only one that's semi sneaky.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'd love to do is like make all those abandoned bases, and only one of them is like the absolute death trap. So like the other ones are just like nothing, and there's just one that's like, if you land on that force, you are dead. Like it's just
they're all abandoned. They're literally abandoned bases. It's like, yeah, and then you step on the wrong one. It's like, Skaven are killing you.
The Skaven mine.
The Skaven.
The mines of Skaven.
Skaventopia, where all the Skavens live and talk about killing everyone, I guess.
Cool. Well, unless you have anything else to say on that, we shall start our next section, which is News Game Plus, where we discuss all the content from this week that we considered talkable. That news. And we'll start off with Resident Evil 7. We mentioned it earlier week when they officially announced the Gold Edition, but this week had a trailer which... Mitch, you immediately haven't touched Resident Evil. But
I tried 5 and... I played the demo for 7.
7's very different. Like, from what you didn't like in Resident Evil, 7 really
Resident
changes
Evil 6
that.
Too.
But at the same time, I know you don't like horror games, and 7's like probably a very bad recommendation on that fact. But regardless, that's not what the news was, or rather what was shown, and that was they had a trailer, another trailer, because they already had one for the Gold Edition, and in that, they showed off quite some interesting bits that very interested in what this DLC is. One, they showed more of the no heroes. I can't remember if it's No More Heroes or No Heroes. Regardless, it's the Chris Redfield focused free DLC that they promised when you won the game.
DLC.
But they delayed it big time. Like, they pushed it way later because they wanted it to become a more expansive or bigger.
They wanted to make more money off it. Yeah.
Yeah. Make what's it's free, so it's like it's not really making more money off it. Like, that DLC is free, but I think it was more I think initially they had it very small and focus. They went, oh, it's free, whatever. And then they went, no, let's make it something worthwhile and release it later.
Yeah, I mean, and it's still a big Resident Evil character, and people are going to go, I didn't buy this yet, but Chris Redfield.
Yeah. Chris Redfield gets redesigned in every bloody game, though. He looks almost different in every game. It's crazy.
Yeah, he likes to keep it fresh and new every time.
What I do like, though, is... just reminds me, though, because then people get all these ideas where it's like, is it Chris or is it someone else? Because it's so hard to know.
Yeah, that is a problem.
Because it's like, oh, is it Chris? Because he looks too different. I'm like, oh, is it just someone else who's pretending to be Chris?
Especially it's him now. Don't worry about it.
I won't talk about what his position is, but his position is very much like, oh, that's odd. Like, that doesn't really make sense why his character would be working for them, but okay. But Umbrella. This DLC, well, the interesting thing is that it's focused on one of the Baker family members that you don't kill in the campaign and kind of just goes off. And this DLC is encountering that person again as Chris. I thought, oh, that's cool. Like, it makes sense. Like, they had a gap. They didn't really explain what happened to that character or showed, like, that person's demise as they did with most other characters. And that's what this DLC is. So I'm like, oh, that's already has me way more interested. Considering it's free, I'm like, I'm very interested because I'm like, well, I'm not paying for it. So there's no reason
for it. It's fun.
Not to try it, yeah. And the other one was the End of Zoe DLC, which that one inherently is spoiler on that is the fact there is a Zoe Baker family who's not shown in the trials but is in the game. And there's one point where essentially you have to make a decision between two characters. And if you don't make her, you just leave her. And you're just like, well, you're going to die. Unfortunately, I can only help one of you. And I'm helping this person, so you're going to die. And you just leave her. And that's just what happens to her. So this is explaining what happens. But the interesting thing is that I thought you'd be playing her in this DLC. It looks like you're not playing hers at all. And instead, you play as another Baker family who's not in the game either. This old guy.
So many Bakers.
Because in this trailer, she turns into like a chrysalis thing, so she turns it to this like this stone crystal type thing, falls to the ground, and then he shows up, picks her up, and goes, you know, I think I'm bringing you home. I think is what he said. He says, something along those lines, but unexpected. I'm like, I'm immediately interested. I'm like, okay, this DLC has got me piqued my interest to who this character may be
and what it might. Yeah, got my interest.
Which initially I'm like, eh. You play Zoe in a swamp, at least it's a visually different thing. But now I'm like, oh, okay, you don't play her at all? That's an interesting twist. Definitely it seems exciting now. And it comes out. It's probably at a bad time, so I probably won't pick up when it comes out. But it's one of those ones where eventually I'll get around to it, I suspect. But another game which is similar to me, but the more I see of it, the more I'm thinking I'm going to get it. And at least not for the story mode, definitely not the multiplayer. With what we discussed in last week's discussion, mate, which you can see on YouTube or our website. Talking about Star Wars Battlefront 2. And this they showed off and finally talked about in a little bit more gritty detail about the Star Wars story mode.
Yeah, the campaign, the story, what we've been wanting to hear.
One of the factoid bits that I'm like, okay, that's a good sign, but we'll see, is that they detailed 5 to 7 hours is what they expect this game will take to win.
I expected as much. I mean, Battlefield 1 had like a 4-hour campaign, which was mostly terrible.
Yeah, I was going to say, I expect this to be realistically 5 hours that you could probably win in 4 or 3. That's why I think is going to be the case.
I think it'll be more like 5 to 7, that's probably like 4 hours. 4 to 5 hours.
Yeah, they're always generous with the time estimates, and because they're not saying like 10 hours, I'm like, okay, so it's probably 5 or less. Like it's not a super long campaign.
Yeah, if they didn't even upsell how long it is. They're like, it's just long.
Yeah, exactly. I expect it to be short, but at least they gave some indication that it might be longer. I was like, please don't be 2 hours.
I didn't expect it to be 2 hours. Not even Battlefield 1 was 2 hours long.
But and the other concern I have, from what I'm seeing, it doesn't look like that's the case. Was that it's just the multiplayer, where you just go to this map and do something, this map to do something, this map to do something, and then it just some story like cutscenes in between. Where it obviously has that as much as you expect. You go to locations, like they showed off Naboo. I'm like, surprise, surprise, you're using a map that's in the multiplayer, going to that location. But they showed off different modes. Like at one point, you're a droid and you're flying around, and like it very much reminded me of the Assassin's Creed Eagle in the upcoming Assassin's Creed Origins. And Watch Dogs 2's droid thing, you'd call that. Drone? They're inherently like the same
thing. Oh, little ground drone thing? Yeah.
No, not the ground drone, the air drone.
Oh, he gets an air drone too? Okay.
He throws it out, and then you can just scan the air and like highlight everyone for you. Yeah, I'm
pretty sure it's unnecessary in this game. You could just go, I'm just going to shoot them all, that's fine.
But it did beg the question for me, at least. I'm like, does that... What they showed was, like, in the, it's the very start of the game, and you're basically getting the droid from... I can't remember where it actually starts now, but it ultimately, you're finding your way to... Aiden Verzio? Is that her name?
Aiden Verzio.
Yeah, something like that. In a cell. So... That could just be the... That just could be it, to diversify the gameplay bit. Just, like,
yeah,
oh, there's like, a little stuff bit.
Yay.
But I do wonder if, because it attaches to a back, I'm like, oh, is there bits later where there is, like, a little bit of a stealth section? Like, comes to my kill zone. Killzone, oh God, what was the PS4 one called? Killzone.
Shadowfall?
Shadowfall, that's one. Yeah, Shadowfall, where there were stealthy sections in it. Where it's like, oh, you can just go in this little open area bit and just, like, kill people in these areas or go this way and that kind of stuff. I wonder if maybe it's going to do that. I mean, these are all speculations. It's probably not true at all. It'll probably be exactly what I expected to be. They'll just be like, battlefield area, and then space battles, of course.
Yeah, because it shows a TIE fighter. It also shows Endor, which is... I don't recall being a multiplayer level when they showed it. But it definitely looks like they're reusing assets from Battlefront 1 because it looked like Battlefront 1. I mean, because it has to. That's where it starts, I think. Because the... She looks up, oh, Death Star. Oops. That
and it's interesting the time period because, I mean, it's got to take over at probably at least... I can't remember exactly how long it took for the First Order to form, but it's got to be at least like 25, 30 years. Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to work that. We should be old.
Because they showed Kylo Ren in that too, in the story trial. I'm like, well, at some point he's got to get Kylo Ren going around, so that's a long time. It's not even birthed when the story starts.
I wonder
starts.
If that's even part of it, or whether they just went, let's just throw that in, they'll get people excited, and then not put him in. I don't know, because that looks like the same footage from multiplayer when they showed him off the first time.
That is a good point. I thought that as well. I'm like, I could just be that, but at the same time, when they've shown Kylo Ren, it might have always been from the story. When they've shown it in the multiplayer stuff, it was like, oh, this is the Kylo Ren story bit.
But yeah, you also get a few other planets you don't go to
and
in the
campaign. Also mentioned that you play other characters. So specifically, they called out Luke. They said you get to play as Luke Skywalker in the story at some point.
What? I don't want to play as Luke. I want to play as the Empire all the time.
That makes the question, I'm like, I don't know how that fits in, but...
Does she turn good?
I don't... Maybe. And also, I don't know if they're going to just do these different characters to... break up the gameplay. So it's like, this is we've got heaps of diversity here because at one point you play as Luke Skywalker, another you play as Kylo Ren or Rey or something.
I don't like that idea. I just wish you just play as her because I wish it was just her story.
I want it to just be Empire too. As I suspect it'll be a change of heart because they keep building it up as like, oh, this is the Empire story, and she's like been not brainwashed, but she's been birthed on a planet that has always believed the Empire is what they're doing is just. I'm like, well, I bet you she'll see the corrupt things they've been doing, and then she'll change her mind. I bet you that's what the direction.
Except, from what I know, she was in a book, and she is very Empire. She sees the rebels as terrorists. She sees them as the enemy. Like, I don't think she'll.
See, they've clearly showed that in the trailers too. But I'm like, well, it's one of those things. Where if you imply something so strong to me, I go, well, it's probably not going to be the case. Then you'll do a flip at some point in the character.
Yeah, but apparently that would probably go against the character that's been already written before. And what it looks
at the same
like.
Time, they're all,
I mean,
they're all,
I can see it happening, but it'd be lame. I just want full Empire. Stick to the good.
I want
the bad.
I want
team.
Full Empire. I like it when it's just focused on the bad guys. And I'm hoping the story is. And it's filling in probably the biggest blank they have now in terms of timeline.
It's a very long time to fit into 5 hours.
Yeah, and the time jump's the thing. I'm like, just at some point, does she like get knocked out and or trapped somewhere? I was like, well, 25 years later, or something like that.
She's
like,
now.
I can't.
50-year-old woman.
I can't imagine it's like every mission you do, it's like, this is 5 years later. I'm like, that would be really bad storytelling, and I can't imagine they'll do that. Moving on from Battlefront, on the Sony front, they did two things. One, they announced a Sony mini controller, which, have you seen it, Mitch?
Yeah, the Hori controller.
Hori, what do you mean?
That's a brand.
Is it?
Yeah, it's not PlayStation. It's Hori.
It's officially licensed, though.
Yeah, it's officially licensed, but it's made by Hori, who've made a few other controllers.
Okay, I didn't see it on the images, like the brand. Okay, yeah. But the actual controller itself is just like this tiny, cutest little thing. Like, it's basically like the Joy-Con in like Nintendo. It's just like this tiny little
cute.
Controller. And with the intention of it being for kids. Which, Sony has, I wouldn't say a reasonable amount of kid games. Like, they definitely have kid-friendly games, like with the Lego games and Nap.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Fills the void. They haven't had a Little Big Planet since the, release kind of thing.
The good old days.
Yeah, so I don't know how many kid games there are, but there are third-party
Knack
AAA too. Ones that exist. Yeah, Knack's the main one they got. But regardless, I just like that it exists. You go,
it's cool that it exists.
This time of control. But it's like, it seems super impractical for anyone that isn't a kid, honestly.
But it also, to me, it reminds me of a little bit like the SNES controller, but it's got a bit more buttons. Right. But like, you could use it for like, say, Shovel Knight or something. As like, if you want true. That kind it of does... more traditional, like old school experience, I guess PlayStation has that now.
Yeah, and it does feel very Nintendo. Like when you show them, like, this looks like a Nintendo controller idea to me. It's like, this is something Nintendo would do.
Yeah, that is, like, and they have, and they will do again.
They have and always will do, yeah.
Yeah, but it seems like Sony is really trying to reposition themselves as the only place to play for, like, every kind of game. You got
the entire hierarchy. Oh, yeah, I do think they've been a little weak in the kid-centric first-party games, but I think Sony always has been. Like, that's why... Like, they've promoted so much Little Big Planet back in the past, because, like, we've got one, and it works.
We've got one, and we also have, like, Mod Nation races. We've got a crappy Mario Kart.
Yeah, like, they're not... When Sony talks about, like, Nintendo stuff, like, they always, like, Nintendo is for families. Like, they think of the gateway console. It was like, Nintendo gets people into gaming, and then gets them on the PlayStation, eventually.
They'll join us eventually.
Yeah, but one thing I always like is how they're like lack of recognition for Xbox on every front. Like, they always never mention Xbox.
We don't talk about them.
Which is funny because of what they just established recently, which was with their Sony Music label, they developed a new publishing label for them, and that it's called Unities. And that's, I don't know, it might be Undies, Unties? I'm not sure, actually. There's no I in
undies.
It. So that, I'm not even, it's not Undies because it's not a D, it's Undies,
underpants.
I think. I thought it was Unities initially. I'm like, oh, it's not. Because there's no I in there. Unless where I got it off was misspelled. We'll see.
That'd be funny.
But regardless, it's a publishing label for them to allow to release games on other consoles that aren't them. But with no mention whatsoever of Xbox. The first game they've got coming is called Tiny Metal, which is coming out on PC, Switch, and PS4.
Isn't that Advance Wars, effectively?
Kind of, I guess. It's basically just like a turn-based war thing.
So Advance Wars.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it before. Like, Tiny Metal, I think, is an IP that already exists. Yeah, it's definitely not old. But in general, like, Sony's saying this is their way to get games onto other systems that aren't their own. Under this label. So they're not releasing under Sony, they're releasing under... under the teaser, whatever the fuck it's called.
Whatever it's called, that thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing.
And it seems indie-focused. I don't think you're going to get... It's not going to be, like, Naughty Dog or something.
We're
like,
releasing it's going Uncharted to be, 5. On the Xbox One exclusively.
Exclusively. That'd be hilarious. But would it never happen, ever.
Not while Sony lives and breathes in company form.
But, yeah, it's just interesting regardless. But speaking of the Nintendo front, we do have some more Mario & Rabbids DLC. That's just come out. And with it you get additional co-op missions. So... This is one of those games that's, like, probably the second highest on my list after, obviously, Super Mario Odyssey for the Switch. And that is, it's basically an RTS Mario game with rabbids in it.
Well, I'd say it's more like XCOM. It's XCOM with Mario and rabbids.
Yeah, well, XCOM is inherently, like, a turn-based game.
It definitely is, in terms of its grid-based, positioning-based.
Yeah, but with that Nintendo, like, it's not Nintendo-made, but it feels like a Nintendo game just by, like, the polish in it, and just, like, how flexible it seems with its gameplay. Like, it's so, free-flowing and moving around. Yeah, they did a really good job at making it look like a Nintendo game, even though it's technically not. But, yeah, we've got new co-op missions being added, which is cool. So, I think four new missions, and also you've got 8 new ultra-hard modes, which from... I remember reading the reviews and people's comments on they are really difficult, like, super hard missions.
Makes sense.
So yeah, this game, although it has the impression of it being lighthearted and easy, kid friendly, apparently has like this really difficult, complex spikes of difficulty in it. Basically, yeah.
Yeah, I expected that much. If it's
very
if it's just going off an XCOM strategy based thing, which is inherently hard, it's going to be hard no matter which way you try and take it. Mm. Kids or not?
Definitely, more content's always good. I mean, I haven't got the base game yet, so I was like, I don't know if I'll commit to DLC or anything. But I just released. I like the look of the game all the time. It's a
I love how Mario Plus Rabbids looks. And we mocked it. So many people mocked it.
When it got announced, like before it was shown, I remember going, this sounds like a bad idea. Then it was shiny E3 and I go, oh no, this looks awesome. And
everyone was like, okay, they've proven themselves. This is cool.
Well, I saw people, I think some people who are doing like rabbits, for example, were still very reluctant. But I'm sure you could definitely go,
okay, that's better than what I anticipated it being.
It showed really well when they actually showed it off.
Yeah, especially with the developer who got all teary-eyed.
Right, yeah. Speaking of a game that doesn't seem to be showing that well, at least not for me personally, Sonic Forces had more footage shown. I'm sure there's still the hardcore fans, like really hardcore fans, you know the ones.
Yeah, the ones who've seen Crush 40 and think Infinite's the most badass character on the planet.
And for Infinite, we've got, I'm assuming there's multiple boss battles, but we were shown a little bit of one boss battle. And it's on a 2D form, and it's basically like creating like these boxes and grids and stuff. I don't think that boss battle in particular was anything that negative about it. Like that it just looked fine to me. I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, there's
nothing exceptional. Nothing.
It didn't look abysmal.
It didn't look that bad. It looked like a Sonic boss battle.
Yeah. The chemical plant gameplay they showed off though was where I'm like, god damn it! Every time I see these crater character like modes, I hate it. I hate how it looks, which is annoying because I don't like having super strong opinions on something before I've even played it. But every time I see these custom characters and just like the gameplay is just, it's just like X, and you just like
kill
all these robots and it just looks so bland.
Yeah, repetitive, I agree.
And it just looks like nothing's going on. Like, there's no sophisticated combat system. It's literally just push a couple of buttons.
Like, I think the point is it's meant to make you excited because it's your own character. It's like, he's doing this. I made him. Yay.
But I don't care. Like, I'm pretty sure I've said it on this podcast, but if not, I'll definitely say it now. I just wanted to be Shadow or something. Like, my character I will be Shadow, because I'm pretty sure if you pre-order it, you get a Shadow skin. I'm like, well, that's the one I'm doing. That'll be it the whole game. I don't want to make a character. I just want to be Sonic or Shadow or... I guess Tails and Knuckles, and that's kind of like the rest are kind of like a give or take.
Yeah, it's like the other guys, but it's like, okay, you've got the white, he's in a kidney, you've got the bird thing.
Yeah, and I can already, if I'm looking at the gameplay and seeing all the characters talk, I'm like, already I'm thinking, just shut up. I don't want to hear any of this.
Like, on the first level they showed, they were like, hey, Sonic, do this. Sonic, hey, it's Knuckles, Sonic, let's do this. Sonic, you'll be all right, said Amy.
And it's so many characters too. It'll be like, oh, here's Silver talking from, like, that 2000 Sonic game, and he's, like, the crocodile, and, like, these other really, like, C, like, Sonic characters, like, way off their characters.
Now you're pushing who we remember, because most people don't remember any more than Tails, Sonic, Knuckles.
Yeah, so it's not even, like, I know them, but I don't really like them, but it's just funny how it's, like, it's not even just Tails, it's, like, it could be, like, six people talking in, like, the span of a minute.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is too much.
Please.
And it's all really bad, corny dialogue. Where it's like, come on, Sonic, you gotta stop Dr. Robotnik.
Sonic, the bad guys, you gotta defeat the Robotniks. Come on, Sonic.
I think they just call him Eggman now, but still OG Dr. Robotnik. That was his name, and now I think they just call him Eggman. Yeah, it's one of those games where I'm getting it. It could be the biggest, the worst game I buy this year, just because, like, there are elements, like, maybe there's something good in there, but every time I see it, I'm like, oh, God.
Oh, God. Sonic.
I still hope at the very least it's not Sonic Boom. That's all I can hope. Sonic Honestly, that's Boom, all anyone Sonic can hope.
Boom. It looks better than Sonic Boom. I'll give it that much.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the modern Sonic stuff. Like, classic Sonic, from what I've seen, it looks fine, but I think with Sonic Mania being so good, I think it's going to hurt those sections. Modern Sonic obviously isn't in Sonic Mania in any way, so I think they could be fun.
It'll be different enough from anything.
Yeah, recently. But by making the custom character too focused on combat, and that is honestly the weakest part I've seen, slash almost always is in Sonic games.
They really keep pushing it, though.
Yeah, and I don't know, just because that's the newest feature. Yeah. And as I said, I guarantee there's some Sonic fans out there like, oh, hell yeah, I want to make my own Sonic character. I'm like,
oh, I'm going to make Sonic the Hedgehog. Hedgehog? Gotta go reasonably fast.
Moving on from Sonic, we've got a game that I am excited for, and it's definitely a game that visually looks absolutely amazing. Now, we didn't get to see what these characters could be. It was just described in one of those, like, Japanese magazines announcing the characters, which every Dragon Ball Z character is being, and that is obviously Dragon Ball Z Fighters. And they showed off, this is where I'm getting excited, because I like seeing these small, way smaller characters, like a couple of episode screen time characters. So we've got Nappa, who, for those who don't know, they definitely know the meme that's come off the scene that he's in, and that is, what's his power level? And then Vegeta goes, it's over 9,000! So that's Nappa's appearance way back in the very first season of Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, ages ago.
Yeah, if I recall, I think Vegeta kills him.
He kills a lot of people, though, so...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he kills him, because I remember Nappa goes, like, full on, like, typical anime, like, he reveals all his muscles and all his, like, clothes pop off and stuff. I think he kills a couple of characters. But what's cool is he summons Cybermen, which these little green bomb explosive things. I think he just plants them in the anime, and the Cybermen pop out and attack, like, the Piccolo and Krillin and all those ones. I believe one kills Yamcha, because Yamcha is pretty much useless and he's always dying. But I do like the fact that Nappa can summon them, so one of his abilities is to be able to summon the Cybermen, which is cool. I'm liking how they're diversifying the gameplay. But on top, Captain Ginyu is being added, and this one super excites me. One, because I'm just like, oh man, that's a deep cut. Like, they're picking... Nappa was a deep cut too, admittedly, but Captain Ginyu is, like, just one of Frieza's, like main, like, little force lieutenant guys. But his character allows you to summon, I'm pretty sure from what I was reading, all of the Ginyu force. So he's got a force of, like, fight himself and four other guys, and I think his abilities let him summon every one of them.
All the boys.
Which is already inherently super cool, just by putting one character and you're getting five characters, including himself. And his ability is one of the most unique abilities I've ever seen in a fighting game. So in the anime, at one point, he uses his signature trait move, which is the ability to body change or body swap with someone. So he literally can become someone else, and then they become him. So he does it with Goku in the anime.
Oh, is that okay?
Yeah, he's the purple dude with the horns.
Yes, I recall him.
Yeah, so body swaps with Goku. In the game, you can body swap with the opponent's character. So let's say they're playing Vegeta, and you're playing Captain Ginyu. Let's say you get to the very last bar of health on Captain Ginyu. You can then body swap to Vegeta. Let's say he's got full HP. You become Vegeta, steal all his HP, and then the other guy becomes Captain Ginyu with, like, no HP left.
Oh, it's so hilariously evil.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I love the Captain Ginyu's ability. I'm like, I'm so excited. Everything about this game is so exciting.
Yeah, it looks really good. Probably plays really good.
Design the characters. I'm so glad they're picking these lesser characters now. Even though there's still quite a few big ones they haven't picked yet.
Yeah, but it gives it a good roster. Like, that's a huge important part.
Yeah. I don't know how big it's going to get. Like, you can bet it's going to be more than 20, because it kind of, if you're less than 20, that's not good. 20 to 30 is probably my guess, somewhere in between there. If it hits 40 level, that's when it starts to get really impressive. Like, most games don't hit that, with the exception of, like, Smash Brothers. I think Smash is over 40.
Smash is a lot of characters.
And Smash has got the inherent thing where they just put the same characters in each game. So it's like, they just, most of the time they don't take them out, they just leave them in and add more.
And then they do reskins that are probably the exact same.
Yeah, and sometimes special guests, like, don't come back.
Yeah, sorry, Snake. Snake!
Yeah. Oh, Sonic's there though, so Return of Sonic.
Sonic always comes back.
Yeah. Sonic is a good addition to that game.
Gotta go fast. But
kind of a segue in the Sega idea, and that is... Warhammer, we've got some... Basically, footage shown off...
The Mortal Empires, which is the big campaign that combines everything. All they did was show a bit of the map, which looks immense. Huge. But all they were doing is showing, like, okay, you got the High Elves fighting against the, like, Chaos, and you've got humans fighting the Skaven, which is like, we couldn't do this in the other one. And you got Skaven fighting lizard men. It's just like, oh, look at all this new stuff. And that's all it showed, alongside a release date. Which picked a really good release date of October the 26th, which means I will not be playing and I'm excited for it.
Such an amazing release date, yeah.
October, I know, 26. I wish everyone could release games at such a terrible, terrible time as they could release that update for Total War Warhammer 2.
I know, it's one of those things where they must know. Like, it's not like they leave in a black hole where they go, oh no, nothing's coming on that day. But I think it's just more of like, look, there are people who are invested in this game are going to be excited for the same day everyone else is already excited for different reasons.
Yeah, it's also a PC-exclusive strategy game, so they're thinking, okay, they don't care about Mario, that's fine. They don't care about Assassin's Creed, that's fine. They don't care about Wolfenstein, that's okay. There's a lot of games coming out right next to us.
Exactly. There's just games for everyone. Like, not everyone's going to buy those games, and with this PC strategy game, there's no direct competition, which helps.
Yeah, and it's just a mode. It's just like, if you have to own the original as well. So it is to people definitely invested in the game. Other people who aren't probably have to buy it somehow. The original game. That'd be interesting.
It's a cool feature that most franchises don't... I mean, they used to do it. Like, it used to be like, you've got the original game, and then you get the expansion, you add to the races. That's just how it worked.
Dawn of War.
But now most of the time, they either start with all the races, or they just build on it. Like, StarCraft is a good example where you start with all the races, and then you just get more units.
More units, because there's only three in StarCraft.
Yeah, and most of most of the units they're adding were all units from the original StarCraft. So it's like StarCraft 2 I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
We're adding in back a classic from StarCraft 1.
It's back,
which is always
better
good.
Than ever.
And obviously Blizzard are very good at balancing stuff, so they make changes to things and most of it. And the story is very compelling in StarCraft. At least what the mode they do, like the story itself. I do like the story. I know some people say it's very much like a cliched like sci-fi.
I mean, StarCraft 1 early on is, but
yeah, I definitely enjoy it.
They take their own identity later on though. StarCraft 2 is very different,
and it's to me it's the most standout RTS story. Like it is a proper story mode with cutscenes, with like little worlds to explore.
I'd say any Blizzard RTS, say Warcraft 3 as well.
That's dated. I'm talking about like the most recent thing.
Modern games,
RTSs. We just talked about Total Warhammer. I don't know if that really counts, but it kind of does. The story mode is just
not
conquest.
Like that. It's like the big open map. Yeah. You conquer it. Whereas Dawn of War 3 is the only one that tried to do it,
but even then,
it didn't. No.
It's not. I don't think it's as diversifying as StarCraft is, it's mission focused.
Yeah, the way you did the missions, you swap each one. So now you're humans. Me, Space Marines, then your Orcs, then your Eldar. I just kept doing that. I was like, I just want to place one and then do the other one. Don't make me play something I don't really want to play, thanks.
Don't force me, damn it.
I'll do what I want.
Alright, well, there was another Warhammer footage shown off for Vermintide 2.
Yep, the Left 4 Dead, Warhammer fantasy game.
Yeah, it's basically one of those, never-ending, zombie squad type things.
You gotta get to the objective, and unlike last one being all Skaven, Chaos Warriors are now a thing, as well as the Nordic kind of tribes like Norska and stuff are now in it. So, the Skaven are in it. It's not... So it's like,
which is cool. I'm Skaven's getting added to things, because I always inherited Skaven, just because I think I mentioned this before, but I used to get a lot of Skaven Warhammer figures back in the day, just because you used to get a lot of bang for the buck. Yeah, you used to get a lot of them. So you could build a huge force of Skavens as opposed to other races where things were a lot more expensive.
Yeah.
Warhammer was always expensive, though. So.
Warhammer's always expensive and always Zoey. But yeah, it looks more like the other one. Might be like how Left 4 Dead 2 added so many more types of enemies, which this one looks like it's doing.
Left 4 Dead 2 is really something that, the other games don't do it like that anymore. Left 4 Dead 2 was just it's just focused on just chaotic, just waves of stuff come at you.
Yeah, and they even added the original game to Left 4 Dead 2, just because they could.
Yeah, why not? Yeah,
it's like, why not?
They mentioned Left 4 Dead 2, I'm like, man, when's Left 4 Dead 3? They should make that. Left
4 Dead 3
exists,
where's
damn it.
Portal 3? Where's Half-Life 3? I think we know the answer to that one.
They definitely have an inherent bias against 3. They hate it.
They hate
3. No 3s exist.
Yeah. They hate it.
But admittedly, half the game developers these days don't like numbers in general. They just go back to dropping the title.
We'll reboot it again, sure, why not.
And finally, to cap off this News Games Plus, we have the news that, thankfully, Square Enix have been logical. I don't think it's because of the date they were going to release it on, more of it wasn't ready, but they've pushed the Final Fantasy Comrades multiplayer DLC from the 31st of October to an undisclosed date in November.
Maybe just a month later, give them a delay to make it so it all works properly.
Yeah, they said it's a month later, but I'm like, it was coming out the dumbest time possible.
Oh yeah, don't do it before. Then. You can do it on the 31st of November, that's fine. You're competing with Xenoblade 2 Chronicles 2. Yeah. Which I don't think is kind of niche anyway.
Yeah, it was one of those ones where there was no reason for it to come out when it was destined to come out. I was like, why not push it? And they have, don't know if it's because of the logical reason or it's just there's problems with it. Could be both, honestly.
Probably.
But bit of both. Regardless, much smarter with where, somewhere in November is what they're saying. And admittedly, that's when I would have likely tried it / played it anyway. So
yes, an A more likely to.
Yeah, I would have anyway, but it would have just probably been way later.
Rather than now, you might do it the day it comes out, just have a look.
Exactly,
before
yeah.
It was a bad day.
Yeah, it's like, wasn't happening. It was not happening then. Period. And that's it. So, closure to New Games Plus.
New Game Plus has ended. It's the end of the New Game Plus.
And discussion mode has been switched on. This week's discussion mode, I guess we're talking about EA again in a negative light. I mean, EA is not helping themselves with their bad press for the worst company in the world or whatever.
No, they're definitely helping it by what they did this week. And good on you, EA. Smart move.
But what? It's literally one of the what are you doing, EA? Damn it! And this news is, I'll just get into what the news is first, and then we can get into it. But they shut down Visceral Games, which for those who don't recall, were developing their like their main Star Wars game they kept showing off on every goddamn E3 conference.
Yep.
And be like, oh, don't forget this one that Visceral Games are working on.
Visceral's making that one. Well, guess what? Not anymore.
Not anymore. It's like, here's 2 seconds of footage of this one. Why we show like 10 minutes of people sketching something on a pad.
Yeah.
Talking about how amazing Star Wars is.
And then EA thought, well, your game isn't quite as amazing as we hoped.
Yeah, well, they essentially decided, and I can quote what their exact thing was, they wanted, they cancelled it because they wanted it to be a broader experience that allows more variety and player agency. Is what and one of the key like quotes
they
that
also
stood
mentioned
out.
They want it to be a game where you come back to. So,
yeah,
what
returning,
that game
yeah.
was initially, I think we thought it was an Uncharted-like game.
That seemed to be what it was going to be, especially because Amy Hennig, who was the Uncharted 3, well, previous Uncharted directors until Uncharted 4, which she was replaced and then left.
Because she left to join Visceral.
To literally make the Star Wars game. Yeah. That was, like, seemingly her entire point was to do that.
Visceral also made Dead Space, if no one knew that, but...
Yeah, they made Dead Space. They made a lot of the games, too. Like, they did... They were involved with the James Bond games back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day before they were Visceral. That was something...
Yeah, no. But, I mean, EA's always have, like... They're really good at, like, killing... like, absorbing companies is probably
and,
a better word.
Well,
they shut them down and absorb them to other teams. And that's exactly what they've done here.
Yeah, it's exactly what they've done here. They've done it time and time again. It's like there's a little comic of where EA takes a developer out to the back to some pit full of other developers they've killed and shoots them too. It was always a picture of BioWare, but people remade it for Visceral. We're like, this is going to happen to BioWare.
But basically what EA was saying with this game is that, look, this is a AAA, or was a AAA single-player story experience. That does not work in this landscape anymore for us as a developer to make enough profit off this game.
Effectively,
so,
yeah.
So, we're readjusting all of it, and seemingly that readjustment is Destiny slash Anthem. That's seemingly
that's
what they're
like.
Going with.
You can see in the press release that the guy felt nothing for what he just did. It's like, this is just business thing. We're probably firing a whole heap of people. And they tried to pin it in a light that we're doing the right thing for you. We're going to make this game great and it's going to be all for you. And just...
That's what it was like. And the thing was so annoying is he talks about it's like, oh yeah, this game was really fun and enjoyable, but it just wasn't enough for what people want now. I'm like, God damn it. This is what I want. I just want a single player Star Wars
game. It's Star Wars. Star Wars sells. Anything Star Wars sells. You could have released it as the Uncharted-like game and people would have bought it like a hell of a lot.
That is everything I wanted. I don't want it to be an online game. I want it to be 1313. They cancelled that one. That was Star Wars Uncharted. Then this game came out. It was Star Wars Uncharted. They cancelled it again.
I don't think we're ever in Star Wars Uncharted. I would love a Star Wars universe game. But I would have also loved this. What this could have been. Because from what they showed off, it looked really good. And, like,
and the thing that doesn't even make sense to me is that Anthem is EA's game. So
they've really got that.
Yeah, they're direct competing with themselves. Like, obviously, these are stabs in the dark. So, I mean, everyone's doing this right now. With
everyone.
Trust me,
we're not the only ones doing this.
Yeah.
I've really listened to people talk about this.
So it doesn't have to be Anthem that they're, you know, or Destiny that they're trying to make. It just has to be a multiplayer game or online game. That's clearly what it needs to be.
As a multiplayer component. Yeah.
So it could be something else. Like, the thing, though, is that's interesting is, like, they pick a fad now, right? So let's say it's 4 years before this game's done now. Which is already a sad truth, but that might be the case.
I just imagine the making of, like, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds Star Wars game.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm just like, what's popular right now? Battlegrounds, PUBG. I'm like, what if they're doing a Star Wars Battlegrounds game?
Because Star Wars
it's not impossible. it's so dodgy. And then the other unclear thing at the moment is Amy Hennig, where she's... What her job title is now, what's happening
I
with
think
her?
I think... Didn't they say they're trying to find the spot? Like, they're just in discussions with her, but... If I'm going to make a big jump, yeah, I think she will leave. I think if you've been working on a game for that long, it's just...
honestly, it must be depressing for her where she was working on Uncharted and she got cut out of that because they wanted the Last of Us guys to take over. I think that was what. I don't think they ever fully clarified
what
happened
there.
Yeah,
we've never known that, but it's definitely seems like
it seems like that was what happened. Admittedly, the Uncharted game that came out never did feel like Last of Us, which everyone thought it was going to be. It didn't. It did feel like Uncharted still.
It was still Uncharted very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't the game that Amy Hennig started. And then she moved on to be Star Wars. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And then for so long, every time EA talked about this game, it was the Amy Henning Star Wars game. That is what this game was.
Yep, they worked on with help from Motive as well.
And like, she's a great storyteller. She's a great director. She's good at like managing these projects. Like, because Naughty Dog's probably one of the best, and she was like basically the main person doing it for ages.
And Naughty Dog does stuff so much. Like, they work very hard. You can just tell what they push out.
And then just to hear that she's been cut off this project, and then the discussions, which to me, I'm like, it's basically like, look, we cancelled your project and we know you wanted to do this. We've employed you. Do you want to continue with us, even though it's not going to be what you want, or just leave? And I'm pretty sure she'll leave.
That is my bet. She leaves EA. I don't think she'll stay there. Someone will hire her very fast.
Oh, yeah. No, she's like Kojima. Like, she's straight up like, she'll be snapped up like that.
Yeah, and people want to be smart for... I'd say... If anyone wants to be smart about this, it should be Microsoft. Yeah, yeah, it's just like, okay, well, you can do this. And then they can cancel it later on and ruin all their hopes.
That's constantly like when we talked about like the Microsoft problem in one of our earlier podcasts, that's basically the main conclusion we had is that Microsoft needs to get developers that people trust straight away. It needs to get the Kojimas of the world where you just hear a name being signed on and you go, well, I have some faith in Xbox now. And they do the opposite of that. They get not many developers and then they cancel the ones they have. Yeah, which isn't the best.
Yeah. EA is currently in a problem where they're doing a lot wrong in the overarching like media. They're pay to win, loot boxes is like a big thing. Now they just kill Visceral, which does not paint them in a good light. And they're trying to, like, why would they make it like an MMO? Like, there could be two things. Could be an MMO. They've got a Star Wars MMO. Could be like Destiny. They've got Anthem.
Yeah. I think they said multiple teams will work on this game too. It wasn't like they just signed it to somebody
else. Yeah, they moved it like Vancouver and a whole bunch of teams. And it looks like anyone working on it is no longer working on it. I think only a minor amount will. EA must have really gone, okay, we're taking over this. This is going the wrong direction. We're pushing this right where we want it to be.
They did say, it makes logical sense that most of the assets will be kept and reused in the whatever game becomes.
Yeah,
so it's not like they've... Because they're not going to waste all that money they've spent on like three, 4 years how long it's been. Like
easily, maybe 100 mil, maybe.
But it is very interesting that they've just scrapped it. And like the very fact that Amy Henning isn't letting it like tells me that like they have really changed it. Where it's like, we don't want it to be what the single player focus. It is just something else entirely.
It makes me scared for anything else anywhere at EA makes. Say BioWare, who's currently working on, well, Anthem is ready.
So scared BioWare's going to get shut.
Yeah, they're working on Dragon Age at the moment, which I think might either get cancelled, that team will get taken out, or it'll be multiplayer focused, which honestly, for EA to be making a full like RPG single player thing at this day and age does not seem right for them, because to me it seems like that is not their kind of thing, and they're going to realize that eventually, and then we're going to hear something terrible has happened.
I don't
think BioWare is going to get shut down, but they might just... Because it's the brand name, but the brand name has been tarnished by Andromeda. Like,
I don't think BioWare will be like Visceral, where they just shut it down out of the blue. I think BioWare will be, it's one bad game off. If Dragon Age does come out, which I think it will, and as you said, it probably will be multiplayer focused or have its loot boxes or whatever shit something they want to put in there. Yeah, if it doesn't perform well, I think that's BioWare gone. Like, BioWare's shut down.
I think...
Take the assets, move them somewhere else.
I think they'll take key players from BioWare, move them into, like, another studio and just probably shut down BioWare. I think
there was a BioWare, like, head person who left very recently.
Yeah,
like,
but they replaced him with the old one. Right, so, to me, it seems like, BioWare is not safe. It is not in... It's not like...
No.
And it's not got EA in the name, which is why I think it's a risk. Because they might either just rename it, because BioWare is not as... Like, it used to be like, you hear the name BioWare and you thought, that will be a great game. Now you hear BioWare and you hear Mass Effect Andromeda and you're like, okay, maybe not so good. And that was why I think they never renamed it, because BioWare meant so much. And now with BioWare meaning so little...
And that's the thing, it has a stigma now, where as soon as you see the next BioWare game, people are going to go, oh, what's the facial models like? That's like when they show the Anthem game, and the first thing they show is the facial models.
Yeah, they're like,
they go, look at this.
Look at that, they have faces, they move, how do you do it?
They look, don't look like someone's
see,
cut off someone's face and strapped it on their head.
We can look like people. We can do that. But yeah, it's never good when they shut down a studio, and it makes you always scared for what's next. And EA loves that question, because... Someone is next.
Yeah. It's always disappointing when you like, I think everyone always knows this, but like, it's a company. Like, companies always do inherit things that are not good for users. It's about them making money, bottom dollar. That's like how it works. But it's just so disappointing that EA, for me, it's like they've been focused on so many things. It's like, here's Mass Effect Andromeda. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's shit. No one likes it. Star Wars Endgame. You know you like Star Wars. You're going to like this. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Cancel. Star Wars Battlefront. It's all free of DLC. We're promising everything we didn't have in the first game. Play the beta. Loot boxes, the lore. Essentially make pay to win for multiplayer. What the hell?
What is EA doing? Like, honestly. And
the story may be... I'm getting the general vibe, it's going to be good. From what I'm saw this week and from the past as well. For the story Battlefront 2. But we yet to see. Reviews should come out and it could be bad. Like, it might be a bad story. I don't know.
Could be, yeah. We don't know. Yeah, and that kills Dead Space as well. Let's not forget that Dead Space went down with that shit.
Honestly, with Dead Space 3, which...
That was the nail in that coffin.
Yeah, that one already, to me, felt like EA's interference with it anyway. I thought, because 1 and 2 was like, we're making them horror-centric games. That is what they were. And the third one was basically like, maybe whacking some more like combat-y stuff and make it more like an action shooter type thing. So have the Dead Space stuff in there, but, you know, make more action shooter.
And then we'll make the crafting bit a bit more monetized so we can make more money, you know? It's just like EA loves to meddle. Like, there's two big publishers that love meddling. It's EA and Activision. Whereas Activision does not touch Blizzard. They don't go anywhere near Blizzard.
They don't touch Blizzard. Like, Blizzard is its just entire separate entity.
Go near Blizzard. It's just like, they're too big. They're bigger than Activision in terms of like people who love
and because Blizzard is so profitable, they don't have to. If Blizzard stopped making money, then I think they would start
Blizzard
making
is always going to make money. They're always going to be making money because they just know how to make money.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just
they'd have to really fall,
You never see Sony interfering with development in games. They always
I think back in the day they're more hands on, but I think after like success of so many of their games, they realized our IP is our strongest thing.
Yeah,
we just let them do their own thing. Naughty Dog is like the biggest one. It's like they will never ever touch anything Naughty Dog does.
No, they
Naughty
won't
Dog
even look at
has
that.
Has much
yeah.
time. Yeah. If Naughty Dog says it'll take 6 years for Last of Us 2 to come out, it'll take 6 years for Last of Us 2 to come out. That's how long
they have the money, and Sony will give them the money. They won't care. They'll go. Know you're going to make this good. It's like trust. They trust them.
Yeah, Sony won't fast track games. I was like, no, you take as long as you need to take. To the point of like detriment sometimes, where I'm like, what happened to Dreams, Mini Miracle Games? That game's just dropped off the map.
Yeah, it's somewhere.
I wish they'd be a little forceful on that. And then Last Guardian was another infamous one where it's like that one took what, like 10 years or whatever.
There's
whatever
difference
it was.
Between announcing things early as well. But it's
because Sony likes to have that like strong connection to developers, and like, you know, we give you as much time as you need, and only really like they almost never cancel anything. Like there was that Rhyme one, which that must something must have really gone
something
wrong.
Something went wrong with I think it was maybe disagreement or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that wasn't one of their first party though, but it was those ones where it surprised me. Like, oh, Sony normally doesn't do this, but they did. So something must have gone wrong.
Something went wrong with it. Yeah, but clearly something went wrong in EA's eyes with Visceral, so they had to kill them.
Yeah. It didn't sound like it. From even the description, he said he's just so nonchalant about it. It's like, yeah, we shut down the studio. We're going elsewhere, making a new Star Wars game, right? Move on.
Yeah, move on, guys. It's like,
these are people's lives, damn it.
These are human beings. You just... Few companies don't think like that.
Yeah. Disappointing. Mediocre.
I don't like ending our podcast on like the most negative news, because we're not.
No, but that's because we've got what's next week. But before we move on to next week, we have to switch off discussion mode in order to move on. So, deactivated. For next week, we've alluded to a lot of times in this podcast, but next week is basically the biggest day, month, of a week of the year.
The big month is finally here.
For video games, it's as big as you can get. I mean, there's also like Thor Ragnarok coming out, so like there's a big movie coming out too. But for video games, what we're talking about. Oh, and Stranger Things. I forgot about that. Good point. TV and movies and video games. The whole thing.
Oh, it's crazy. It's crazy, man.
We've got... I'll mention one before I get to the three big ones. Hidden Agenda comes out next week. And I just want to mention it because I definitely like the look of it, even though I know it's going to be completely overlooked.
Yeah, there's three other big games going to be out there in the little Hidden Agenda. I like the idea of Hidden Agenda, but...
I really like Supermassive's previous games, but it is one that is overlooked, and I fully expect myself to overlook it just because of what else is coming out. And we've got the big three. Let's just go off with the biggest one off the bat. Super Mario Odyssey.
Oh.
I already know that's you and me straight up. Like, that's what we'll be playing.
Oh, yeah,
that's
we're
going to
be talking about that. I might play, but yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah. Well, I know I'm getting Assassin's Creed in. Like, so Assassin's Creed Origins.
Oh, so
Origins
I got that on Steam. It'll be preloaded very soon.
It's like I'm not buying it later like I do sometimes. I'm like, even though I know I won't play it, I'm getting it in, but I'm not going to touch it.
Oh,
it's going to be Odyssey all the way.
It's going to sit there and go, you wait your turn. Mario's at front of the queue because it just looks so jolly and fun.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be good. And for me, it's like a double whammy because I don't own the Switch yet. So I'm like, I'm getting a whole new console. And the Odyssey. So it's like double exciting. Next week is going to be exciting for me in general.
Yeah, it's good week. God, like, it's finally out.
And then we'll mention that one, which I like the look of, but admit for me, it's like easily I'll get it probably later down the line. It's not a huge focus for me, but I think for some people it will be a big deal, and that's Wolfenstein.
And the Nazi killer business. Business is a booming.
Which it looks good, but it's not the big one. Some people it will be. Yeah,
I haven't played the New Order. It's on my list. I really want to play it. I will play it because I really like the idea of Wolfenstein and it's really cool. And the new one looks pretty good.
It's a classic shooter. Like, it's sort of like Doom came. When Doom came out, like, that's just old school shooting, just like fast paced.
Yeah.
Wolfenstein's not as fast paced, but it's the double dual wielding,
over the top action with guns and stuff. It's like, I love Bethesda going over the top with it. They've just gone, okay, we're taking out modern sensibilities and just gone back to what made Wolfenstein good, what made Doom good. It's like,
and that's a good thing to do, I think, honestly. Just like focus on the best elements. Don't go like, this is what it was. Like, I think that's sometimes the problem with Sonic is that Sonic still, like, it's like, oh, it worked for Sonic Adventure. I'm like, yeah, because at that point story wasn't a big focus in a lot of games, so people didn't care. Now story is such a big point. Knock off the story. Sonic is never going to be compelling. Get rid of it and just make it what Sonic Mania was.
Sonic Mania. Like, I don't even like Sonic.
You just set up a narrative that just fits the plot, but it doesn't need to be anything. Like, Mario understands this. You don't need a plot. You just need to set up a narrative that just steps from A to B just heaps of gameplay stuff.
Yeah, the thing that Mario's good at is obviously gameplay, not story. As much as I like Super Sunshine's whole court case and Mario gets arrested, just out of nowhere.
But it's still set up though. Like, it's never like, you're never getting like 1 hour cutscenes of Mario just like talking about stuff.
Well, hello, but pizza. I did the bills.
Although I think about it, like, I'd love to, like, see like serious anime Mario or something. Just like, man, they took my family from me. I have to get them back.
That goddamn King Koopa, he did it again. Luigi, we gotta do it again, my man. We gotta kill them all.
we gotta take them back.
But Mario, we've already killed them all before. But this time it's serious, Luigi. For some reason, I've got a Batman.
For some reason, even though Mario's always talked in a like super high pitched voice, he's somehow given a Batman voice for this.
It's like all these years of fighting Bowser, he's just broke. He's like, it's the return of Batman or whatever. The Dark Knight Returns, but in Mario form. Or he's just old, he's just like.
it's literally old man. It's old man Mario, and he comes back and he's hardcore as hell. He's just like ripping Koopas in half.
It's like Bowser's like,
time to stop anymore.
And Peach's like, you have to stop. This is going to. This is more than me. This is them. And
this is Mario.
It's kind of off topic, but I actually really want to see this thing.
We went completely off topic. Just fantasizing about some kind of Batman themed Mario game.
Yeah, Breaking Bad Mario with a bit of Batman.
Breaking Bad Mario, that sounds good.
With the mushrooms.
But it's it. It's not what you're getting with Super Mario Odyssey. You're getting a classic Mario story told with a new spin of the hat. Yeah.
Oh god.
And that's kind of it for the big stuff. I mean, usual,
Assassin's
stuff,
Creed.
Big three.
Didn't really mention any of that.
Oh yeah, we very briefly mentioned, but Assassin's Creed Origins. Egypt. We mentioned so many podcasts up to this point.
Yep.
Egypt looks awesome setting. It's barely ever done. I can't.
Not enough. I can't even think of a game. I know like Titan Quest, maybe Age of Empires.
And mythology, those kind of things. Yeah, it's very not my focus on most games, but not in this way. This feels like blockbuster quality, like visuals and that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited to see explore just the setting. Like, I don't even care about Assassin's Creed. I care about the Egypt, and I like everything they're doing with it. It's cool.
I think in general a lot of people are excited about it, which is it's good because Ubisoft needs to make successful, but we even mentioned Vivendi. It's like this weird thing. It's like if Ubisoft does really well, Vivendi is more likely to buy it than if they're doing worse. So it's like this weird.
Yeah, it's like this weird. If they do well, they're more tempting, but if they do bad, they're gonna be cheaper.
Yeah.
Poor Ubisoft.
So it is this weird thing. Like, Ubisoft, I know, is fearful. They're very fearful. You can just see it every time they talk. Like, Assassin's Creed looks awesome.
Yeah, I am hyped for.
Good to go.
Well, I actually want to play all three of the big three, but Mario is most hyped. Assassin's Creed. I have hype for it because Egypt looks sick. And Wolfenstein, I wish I'd played the old one. If I had, I'd be way more excited.
I think, I don't know if it's a, I don't think it's essential. Like, you get the idea of what the woman's sign is. You don't need to play the old one. I think the old one was too slow, like the New Order.
Yeah.
But this one looks like it's off the bat, just crazy balls of the wall stuff going on.
It's going nuts.
Yeah. I it seems like it's going to be a good shooter, but yeah, I think it will be. I'm pretty confident all three of these are going to be good. I'd be very surprised if any of these are Mass Effect Andromedas, especially Mario. If Mario's a Mass Effect Andromeda, I'm like, what the hell happened?
I lose faith in the world.
I'd literally, I couldn't be more confused that happened. Like, comes out like, that can't happen. Is this? But yeah, that's... yeah, it can't. It basically can't happen. Yeah,
you'll hear probably our thoughts on some of these games. Definitely Mario next week.
Yeah. But by the way, we're kind of been rambling for a bit now. So if you like our general rambles and that kind of stuff, we have been Optional Extra, and you can find us at optional-extra.com, as well as our YouTube page, where we talk about video games in our discussions, review stuff occasionally. I mentioned the Shadow of War review. Check that out. We have a podcast called Screenshot, where we talk about movie discussions occasionally.
Or TV sometimes, even.
TV sometimes as well. Maybe Stranger Things on the way, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe Thor. Well, definitely Thor.
But
I thought we're doing Thor.
Thought we're doing Thor. But in general, we've got a lot of stuff going on. So keep tuned to our channel if you enjoy it. We hope you come back. So thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Goddamn King Koopa.